I'm Lance Carter, and you're listening to the Daily Actor Interview Podcast. Margaret Colin may be familiar to you from shows like Gossip Girl, Chicago Hope, and the canceled Too Soon Now and Again, but her TV and film resume are no match for her 25-year stage career. Works by Tennessee Williams, Shakespeare, and Broadway shows like A Day in the Life of Joe Egg and Jackie, where she portrayed Jacqueline Kennedy in her Broadway debut, are just a handful in her long career. She's currently starring as Lady Croom in the Broadway revival of Tom Stoppard's Arcadia. The show shifts in time from 1809 to the present day and features original events as they occurred in the past, and a reconstructed account that is painstakingly pieced together by modern-day historians. I could have talked with Margaret for hours, and quite frankly, she's lucky that I even let her off the phone at all. She's a truly great actress who has so much to offer actors. We talked about Arcadia and how she got involved, how she creates a character, and working with Tom Stoppard. This site takes a lot of work, so I really do appreciate it when you support our advertisers. And now, here's Margaret.
So, Arcadia, wow, such a great cast. I mean, it's awesome. How did you get involved in the show?
Thanks, I think it's a great cast, too. Almost all of the people I didn't know. I mean, I only knew Byron Jennings socially, so it's been a wonderful new group ensemble to get to know and to call friends. I got involved because I met with David Laveau to play Lady Croom. I'd seen the production 15 years ago, and frankly, it went right over my head. I have my friend at the time, and still my friend, Haviland Morris is playing the Chloe role that Grace Gummer is playing, so I went to support her. And I, you know, just went right over my head. So this time, when I met with David Laveau, the ideas were just, I mean, they're intense, and you know, they come at you with rapid-fire British accents and an extraordinary speed and facility, and if you miss it, you miss it. So I was a little lost, although, of course, you know, I adored the actors, but I just was the content. And so when I said that to Tom Stoppard, he goes, well, now you'll be the one to lob the ideas over everybody's heads. And I just, you know, which is kind of great because he knows that it's really not for, the audience has to, as we say, lean forward. And we are getting audiences that do lean forward. So a wonderful thing that happened that was part of the project to begin with was that it would be accessible. And basically, David wanted real things to happen on stage between real, fleshed-out people, not stereotypes of what English people are like, not stereotypes of what of any sort, of real people genuinely, you know, being confused, genuinely exchanging information, genuinely falling in love, and so therefore the piece becomes much more accessible. I think that's why we're having the success we're having, and so many people are not having the ideas go over their heads because they're engaged with the characters.
Now, what was the rehearsal process like for you? Is Lady Croom like someone you immediately had a handle on, or did she take a while to come out?
You know, I think she's still coming out. I think I'll probably get the I'll get the hang of her by the time we close. She's terribly funny. The rehearsal process was incredibly unusual because our English counterparts, Leah and Tom and Belle, were delayed for 2 or 3 days before they could join us at the start of rehearsal in January. So we had Tom Stoppard in the room giving us a tutorial almost for 5 hours to 2 or 3 consecutive days about all the ideas and the relationships and why he chose one word and what he thinks works here and what he thinks. So it was, you know, and had he been anyone else but the brilliant and entertaining Tom Stoppard, I would have been bored to death listening to anybody talk for 5 hours. So, but he's a genius, and he's a genius that likes to show off. So, it was wonderful. It was, you know, an enormous resource. So, coming to Lady Croom that way was fantastic. For example, the idea that in the burning of the sea, the burning of the Lord Byron letter, with Lady Croom and Septimus, that was, that's a delicious, wonderful exchange. But Tom said that it's not on a seduction scene. They're not suddenly attracted to each other. She gives him the gift of going to bed with him. It is an exchange. Because he burns the letter and saves her reputation, and it's something that Septimus wants. She says, all right, because you burned the letter and didn't read what Lord Byron wrote about me, you know, come to bed. And it's an exchange. And so that, I think, was the beginning of the journey for Lady Chrome, because I hadn't made up my mind at all, but that was certainly a good angle into her. And of course I knew that she's keenly observant and very funny and very wry. So that I got pretty quickly.
Yeah. What's opening night like for you? Is it something like you just kind of want to get it out of the way and just start the run of the show, or I mean, like, how do you feel about that? Or how did you?
Opening night?
Yeah.
You know, this, I've been doing this for, you know, several decades now. So it goes through different phases. And this one I was keenly aware of, you know, who's going to come. And by that, I don't mean the reviewers, because unfortunately, reviewers don't come on opening night. It's sort of some glorious party for producers and family and celebrities, but it's not, you know, there are no critics there that night. So, and it's usually, I mean, in a commercial production, it's a fun opening night because you're surrounded with so much support. And this time, I was really preoccupied with whether or not my parents were going to come, which is hysterical. But, you know, I kind of had a sneaking suspicion that my mom would really like to be there, but she didn't want to impose. So, and in fact, that is what happened. So I was very happy that she wanted to be part of the whole glamour and the business aspect of the whole night. But I said to my husband, the knot in my stomach is finally gone after the papers, you know, came out on the next day. You know, the next day, everybody weighed in with their opinions. And then I could go to work the day after opening, and I could start my work in front of the audience now that all judgments have been passed. And the, you know, the producers and the director and the playwright, who are wonderful. I mean, they're wonderful, but this time, for some reason, the knot in my stomach that started with run-throughs in the rehearsal hall left after the papers were printed on the day after opening on March 18th. And my brilliant husband said, it's because you're at the edge of the diving board. That's where you're living, on the edge of the diving board. And sometimes you just, you know, reach up to the sky, jump, touch your toes, and arch. And it's easy, and you just think of the process. And other times, you're standing there with your toes on the edge going, oh, my God, I'm so high up, I'm nervous. And there's no accounting for it. There's no planning for that feeling. You cannot anticipate which show is going to give you, you know, butterflies in your stomach, or you're just going to go through your really great preparation and the knowledge that, of course, you can do this. You know, this is where I live, on the edge of the dining board. So this time, opening night was very nice, and I was glad to have it behind me.
Sure. Well, I love that. You know,
other opening nights, I've completely enjoyed it. I've had a glamorous, wonderful time.
Yeah. Well, I love that. You know, you've done TV and film and theater, and I love that you still get nervous at things, you know. That's great.
I do still get nervous, but then I'm also terribly relaxed. So if I could, you know, and then you just sort of cycle out, you know, try to analyze yourself. Well, what exactly are you nervous about? If it's a good thing like making this woman come alive for these 100 people, 1,000 people in the theater, great. You know, what exactly is this unnamed anxiety? So, you know, we go on from there. But, yeah, it's a thrilling thing to do for a living. My God, yeah.
Now, you went to Hofstra, right?
I did.
Were you a theater major there?
Yes, dance and drama and dance. Yes, drama major, yep, that was me.
And then when did you get your first, I guess, professional job? Like, right.
I was the edge of night while I was still in school.
Yeah.
I didn't graduate from Hofstra, but we had this, have an enormous group of friends, dear friends, from Hospiceville, and we just had a memorial service yesterday, Sunday, for Dr. Richard Mason, who died several months ago, and he was our professor, and our director out there. He was so influential and so beloved and so infuriating. So part of the reason I think I was so employable was because he started working with me as soon as I landed there as a freshman, and I was cast very quickly. And I was still a teenager. I, you know, like 19, I think, when I got The Edge of Night, and that was simply because this wonderful man came backstage and left his agent. Well, he sent his agent's card backstage and said, "I think you're ready to compete. If you want to meet with my agent, I'll set up an appointment. Just call them." And I did auditions for them. And that was an agency called Oppenheim Christie. I don't think they're around anymore. And then the first audition they sent me on was The Edge of Night, and I got it opposite Kim Hunter, for God's sake.
So you got your very first, you booked your very first audition?
Yeah.
Nice.
I did. Yeah, it was very nice.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it was good. It was wonderful. It was 6 months, and it was in New York, and I commuted from Long Island, where I was raised, to Manhattan, where I stayed in my aunt's apartment on the Upper East Side and walked to work on East 44th Street. So it was... It was great. It was, you know, great. I was learning like crazy from everybody around me, and certainly I learned on the job camera work, because I've never been in front of a camera before. I mean, my mother's a movie camera, but that's about it.
Well, that's great. So then, how did your career progress from The Edge of Night to then you went to As the World Turns, right?
Yeah, there was a little time off in between the two of them, and then I went back and picked up some more credits in Hofstra and auditioned some more through that agency, and then the next audition was As the World Turns that I got. I mean, there were many in between, but I got As the World Turns, and stayed there happily for several years, two or three years, I don't recall, and that's where I met Justin, and I met, you know, I worked with Larry Brigman and Don Hastings, all these really wonderful actors on that show who really, I was working with brilliant actors and fell in love and married one of them. So, and it's just a series of auditions. You know, here's the material, go get them. And then I think I moved into the city I've been on As the World Turns for a couple of months.
And you also, right now, are working on Gossip Girl.
I am.
Are you guys on hiatus?
To jump forward 20 years.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Towards, like, 30 years, yeah. I'm on, I play Evil Eleanor on Gossip Girl. I only did 5 episodes this year, so I'm surprised people still even remember me. But, yes, it's on hiatus, which is really convenient because we shot 2 shows while we were in previews. And as you probably know, they can call you in for rehearsal during previews, and then you have the show at night. So I shot Gossip Girl from 5 o'clock in the morning till noon, and then I went to the theater at 1 o'clock and rehearsed, and then did the show at night. So that was grueling, and it really made me feel like I was, you know, young again. Well, if you can do this, kiddo, you know, this is it. You're living the dream.
How many times did that happen? You must have been exhausted.
That happened. Like we did 2 shows. I was exhausted, but it was a good exhausted because I was, you know, I was doing it. You know, I was doing it, and Gossip Girl was very, very kind about working around my schedule, getting me out on time, and they cut me out of scenes that wasn't absolutely needed in. But, you know, it happened, 4 or 5 days? It was enough.
Wow. You have, like, I think, sort of, like, a dream, my dream life. You know, you live in New York, you're doing theater, you're doing television. I mean, and it seems like you're constantly working. Like I said, you have my dream life. I just want you to know.
You know, when I was little, I wanted to be in love, and I wanted to act. And and spent most of my life in both of those wonderful states.
Yeah.
So I've been really, really blessed and really, really lucky. And I work hard. I also suffer from, as I mentioned, various anxieties. And during long stretches of these many decades, I thought that, you know, it was over. You know, I've never, it's been 9 months. I haven't had a job. I better go, you know, do a television, you know, piece. And what I, of course, love doing is film and theater. So I really like that. It's a shorter-term commitment. It's an opportunity to explore different actors and to also different characters, and also to, you know, work with better and better artists, more and more, you know, artists at the top of the at the cream of the crop, and learn from them. So that's the joy, is that you can, you know, be in that company. And then now it's helping, you know, younger or not necessarily younger, but newer artists in film and independent film, and certainly, you know, being the established actor with people making their Broadway debut, it is great. I mean, it is, like I said, about six times ready. I learned on the job as well as at Hofstra with the training I got there, but it was working with these gifted, ridiculously talented actors with extraordinary experience on stage, off stage, in film, on television, that I learned in those early days of the soaps. So now it's at least my opportunity to do that and to keep pushing forward with what I can bring at this stage of the game. So the whole adage that it was going to be over when you were 30, it's going to be over when you're 40, hasn't really applied, because I'm, you know, I'm really blessed, and I've had a lot of really great breaks from some really talented and generous people who've helped me and consider, you know, continue to see what I can bring to the party. But having said that, I'm also very eager to go meet with people rather than get offers, you know, audition for people who I think I shouldn't have to audition for, because there's a body of work out there. But it quickly becomes, in this new era, you know, if you want it, you have to go get it. It's like the recession hit show business as well. If they continue to have, they being producers and casting people in studios, continue to have something you want. You would like to play this part. So if you go in and you meet with them, then you can have that experience. And when I read the Stopford play and I saw that Billy was going to be attached to it, and then Raoul was going to be attached to it, and then when I met with David, I thought, well, this would be a beautiful challenge that would keep me stimulated and growing for the length of the run. And it's sexy and articulate and extraordinary ideas about why we're here and what are the functions in the society and also in science that makes life possible. So I figured, you know, I could handle that. I could handle thinking about that for a couple of months. And it's wonderful. I mean, it's really very, it's sexy and very mentally stimulating. So that was a good idea. You know, I keep showing up. I keep showing up. And that, I think, is a key.
When your process of creating a character, is it now, has it become more of a shorthand for you? I mean, is it easier for you? Or is it still kind of, do you still struggle at times with people you don't really know?
Oh, I do. I do struggle at times with people I don't really know. And it's also the demands of each individual character. When you're working on something as fast as a television series, whether it's daytime or nighttime, my initial interpretation is the one that is the strongest, and I bring that to the party. So they're sort of, and usually they're expecting one of the, you know, many schizophrenic visions of Margaret Cullen that exist to show up and flush out their script. So I stick to that. I stick to, you know, what my first impulse is with when I read the character and what I can bring to her and why I should play it rather than any other actor. And those are that's just instinctual and based on, you know, decades of experience. And but when I was younger, and, you know, during various, like, or a new mother, or, you know, fresh off some big success, or, you know, some other, or coming out of some lull in my work, you bring different things. You know, like I said, the multiple personalities of who I am. And so now, I certainly don't bring the same character qualities as I did when I was 19, but there's, so I'm more conscious of choosing which aspects of me to bring to a character. And then I went through the pleasures of working with Estelle Parsons at the Actors Studio. And that was a reinvestment in the kind of work that I really love in, you know, character building and script analysis, and really trusting that I am once again enough. And as Estelle says often, she goes, I don't know what I do, I just know what I do. And I think that's pretty good. When I played Jackie, in Jackie there was an enormous amount of material available to research Jackie Kennedy Onassis. So that was wonderful. There is some sensitivity with the quality of capturing her demeanor and capturing her vocal pattern, and so I could do that. But if I'm going to create like a John Patrick Shanley role, and I know that she's a military wife, and it's in the 70s, and for like Defiance, I can research that from pictures of Camp Lejeune listening to tapes of what that particular Southern accent would sound like, and looking at books and magazines of the time, that helps me to, you know, go from the outside to the inside to create that lady. But for Lady Chrome, in a commercial production, we have designers for the clothing, we have set designers for the world we live in, we have wig designers for what our hair will look like, and I have to, you know, elbow my way back into the boat, if you will, that they have designed so that I can steer this Lady Chrome through Arcadia. And that was with a lot of vocal work as well, because she has Lady Chrome has a great facility with language and turns phrases with the British accent and the period aspect of it, because as you know, these characters are in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. So this was a lot of technical. Those were a lot of technical requirements, and they remain technical requirements every time I get on that big stage after I climb those four flights of stairs. So this character is, you know, quite a healthy, terrific challenge, and I created it starting from my first impressions and then going through all the things I just described to you.
Do you have like for Lady Chrome, do you have like a notebook that you wrote down, or is your script just littered with notes?
Yes. My script is littered with notes. That notebook stuff, I don't know. I see the kids do it. I see Raoul do it. I see them take their script apart and tape it into a different whole other script. They put pictures in there and inspiration. I'm like, that's really cool. Absolutely no time or interest in doing it, but that's really cool. So I scribble notes in the margins and on the flip side of the page of the script that I'm working on. Yeah.
What is your advice to actors?
I think you have to be passionate. I think you have to be curious. I think you have to be compassionate. I think you have to be really curious about the human condition. I think LA is a really, really tough town. I know it is. Yeah. Work. It's a great place when you got a gig. It's really hard when you don't, because it's all about the business. The whole town is about the business. So, when we lived there regularly, I used to think our cleaning lady had better, you know, business connections than I did. So, to go out and refresh and to recreate yourself, to be inspired, you know, that's the key. I think our library is stocked with acting books and autobiographies and plays. We go to the theater very often. When we see films, we are talking about the acting and not so much about the business. I think this passion for fame and this need to be to expose yourself so readily, if not the actor's friend. So I think that we should not. I think if you want longevity in the business and you want to work in the business, you have to have something on your mind more than fame and exposure. And when I talk to kids in high schools about it, or grade school, or junior high, they're very surprised to learn that becoming famous is not why I wanted to be an actor. I mean, I wanted to be an actor because creating an alternate reality, which is a theater and or a character in front of a camera, exposes us all to how other people might think and how other people might live, and so therefore we grow in compassion, and maybe we don't have to make the same mistakes that the actor that I'm watching is making, or maybe we can have more compassion for that person, because after all, it's just a human being. So if you lose track of all of that while we're trying to do 90 million sit-ups and fit into the latest designer jeans and get into our, you know, very hip footwear, whether it's my son's all-star sneakers or if it's, you know, stilettos. If we lose track of all that, then we have no interpreters. We just have pretty people walking by.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any longevity in it for an actor that way. I think it's the need to. Oh, if you think you should train more, you should train more. If you should be around, if you're not around, if you're the best actor in the room, get in a better room. Get in a room with better actors. Dialogue. Don't be afraid to form an opinion. Educate yourself so that you can form an intelligent opinion. That's my advice. And turn off the damn TV.
Yeah.
Turn off the TV. I don't know what we're all blogging about. I mean, you know, what the hell are we blogging about? What is, you know? So that's my long-winded advice to you.
Thank you, Margaret, and thank you for listening. Keep coming back to Daily Actor for more great interviews, news from film, TV, and theater, and so much more. Thanks for supporting the advertisers. I'm Lance, and I'll talk to you soon.